Hello and welcome to our Monday edition of Bring It In with True Hoop. My name is David Thorpe. And as is typical on a Monday, we have Henry Abbott, who normally is hosting. Hello, Henry.
Hi, David. How are you?
I was better, as I told you, until I read your recent post this morning, which even after talking to you on the phone a little bit, at around 8 o'clock or so, everything seemed okay. But reading these posts, it kind of changes the point of view that, at least for me, that I have as I enter the work week, which normally is why I don't think you post on Mondays.
Monday morning was not the great choice. To be totally honest, I wrote all this on, it was finished and ready to go on Thursday. And then I was like, well, Saturday morning is actually not a bad time, but that was September 11th.
Yeah,
no good. So last thing you want to read about. So I just made it for Monday, but yeah, David made a hilarious before the show started. David was like, I think Jose, if you could shrink down and travel the byways of David's brain, it would be like ice cream sundaes and stuff.
Like, yeah. So basically, that's what I was going to get into, is we're going to allow you to walk us through the dark recesses of that brilliant mind that you have. And as a way to explain it, what I said to you is, if you could shrink into a tiny little capsule and travel on my brain, I think you would see a lot of really beautiful basketball plays for sure. I would hope you'd bump into some images of my wife and kids, but mostly it'd be gigantic bowls of sundaes and delicious Asian food or whatever things that I like to think about. Your mind would be a darker, darker place, at least while you're doing this stuff. I can attest that you're a very sweet, fun-loving guy. We have an amazing time talking on the phone all the time, but you go to some special places. And when I read your stuff, I always think the same thing. Like, what in the hell is going on? What has happened in this world, in this country, and other countries the last 50 years? So, Henry, the stage is
yours. Yeah, I'm not going to belabor the point with, like, retelling this 15-part and growing series. But, like, you know, the big picture is that, you know, we started with this kind of fact, this uncomfortable fact that the founder of Apollo Global, Leon Black, paid Jeffrey Epstein nearly $200 million, according to Apollo's own investigation, and Leon Black has since resigned. So that's one fact. Another one is that the 76ers billionaire, Josh Harris, was a co-founder of Apollo. He also recently resigned from Apollo. So the first question behind this whole thing is, like, why would you pay Jeffrey Epstein that much money? And it's not an easy one for any of us sports writers to answer, but I'm that guy. It's like, let me try to figure it out. Second question is, what's the CIA doing here? Why are they in this story at all? There's a former CIA executive on the Apollo board right now. Far more credible people than me suggest that Jeffrey Epstein himself had intelligence involvement. That's a complicated thing, but there's a lot there. There are people with purported ties to intelligence at every stop of this story, going back a century. Some of those kinds of conspiracy theory, kooky things just melt away once you really look for good evidence. In this case, I would say, you know, read the whole series, use your own judgment, click the little links to the sources. But I think in this case, the idea that intelligence is somehow involved just gets obvious at some point. There's so many links. And then the kind of other third question we started with is, why is the NBA so cozy with Apollo Global and the people around Jeffrey Epstein? In addition to Josh Harris, Apollo's president, Jim Zelter, was Adam Silver's roommate at Duke. Tony Wrestler of the Hawks, the late Paul Allen of the Blazers, several people who invest in NBA teams have ties to Apollo, its founders, Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, or Apollo's predecessor, Drexel Burnham Lambert. That's how it started. There's just all of these connections, and what the hell? What the hell's going on? What actually happened?
Right. Well, I'm watching the morning show with my wife, which I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's... there's some Game of Thrones things going on in this little talk show where everyone's trying to take down everyone. And I don't think you've approached these stories that way. I think you're just reporting facts and connecting dots. The dots is what made me think of the morning show. That's how this show begins, the dots, which, you know, stand for whatever you want to think it is. But what I didn't ever see coming in this lengthy thing that you've been writing about until your last post last week, was the appearance of Hitler, like the Hitler, not just someone named Hitler, but the terrible guy. So how did that break into your story on the NBA and Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to be honest, like exactly how it weaves into the bigger story, there are parts of the story that are earlier than Hitler. We talked about United Fruit and various other things. And after this, which we'll get into more in things to come, we don't shill a lot here on Drew Hoop, but really this stuff is a ton of work. If you subscribe, it helps us do more. But this is, yeah, this Hitler thing was kind of a holy shit moment for me, where you kind of see the world through a different set of glasses after reading it. And I've been hearing that from people all weekend, to be honest, including, I guess, some people at dinner party at your house.
Yeah.
Like the history of this is really not like they've been taught to us in high school. I have a little notes here. Let me just quickly, like the 2-minute version is, after World War I, Germany owed reparations to England, France, and other countries. The terms of that were negotiated and renegotiated, and there were private meetings and public meetings and the Versailles Conference. In those various conversations, many of the biggest companies in the US, the Rockefellers, JP Morgan, the like, had incredibly connected lawyers negotiating on their behalf. These are people like Alan Dulles, his brother John Foster Dulles, and war hero Wild Bill Donovan. Remember those names? They negotiated terms that, in retrospect, looked pretty favorable to German business. US taxpayer money, more than $1 billion, I understand, in those days, money went from US taxpayers to Germany, as did huge investment from banks, the world and the world's biggest conglomerates. So there were deep investment and partnership with American companies like Ford, ITT, JP Morgan, and DuPont. None of this is like conspiracy theory stuff. You can look this up. It's in the New York Times. It's in like a bunch of places. JP Morgan himself was alive at the beginning of the century. He met with Germany's central banker as early as 1905, and many of the key executives, Germany's biggest conglomerates, had business relationships that predate Hitler's rise. American big business bet big on Hitler's Germany over decades throughout his rise. One example is by the summer of 1940, World War II had begun, but the US had not joined it. Texaco, a Texas-based company, was evading British blockades to get oil to Hitler's war machine. And as was reported in the New York Times at the time, they hosted Hitler's agent at a house in New York City. His agent, this guy, Gerhard Westrick, had been a lawyer, a business-focused lawyer based in Germany, who partnered on the ground with these American conglomerates, right? And now he explained to Justice Department investigators that he like went to big wigs of Hitler's regime and was like, look, I have all these connections. I think we can make inroads in American business. He went to a meeting at the Waldorf Astoria and reportedly promised monopolies to these American companies who would help them out. So all of that's like, whatever, Randy in the comments, so far I'm not hearing the problem. What got crazy here is once America did, that time of the meeting at the Waldorf Astoria, they were saying that there was a few months from conquering the United Kingdom and having an empire that spanned all of Europe, and then they would give these monopolies to these companies. Who knows how much that's worth? But FDR didn't join the war at that time, but he did after Pearl Harbor. And then they had to immediately create what later became the CIA, our first national intelligence agency. The crazy part of the story is that the people that they hired to run it, the first thing was called the OSS, was run by Wild Bill Donovan, one of these very lawyers who works for these conglomerates who were doing deep business with Hitler's Germany. His key appointee was Alan Dulles, another one of these lawyers who he positioned in Switzerland, where there was the bank that JP Morgan was very involved in that financed Hitler's operation. So then Alan Dulles later ran the CIA. So we get to this sort of new way of thinking, which is like, what does it mean when you say that intelligence is involved in something? I think the Hollywood version would make us think like, oh, it means there are good guys in the room and they're taking notes and they're passing them notes to the good people who will make good choices for America, right? Like this story makes you think like, what the fuck? Like, you know, it could be, we should be open-minded about what that is, I guess is what I'm saying.
And I don't know if you ever saw Game of Thrones, but one of the ways that the Daenerys Stormborn, the queen, was hoping to change the world was she wanted to, what they called, break the wheel, right? And so as you describe these things, that very much seemed like the wheel, and not the wheel, not the American wheel, the power structure wheel. It works together and grinds up everybody else.
Yeah, there's Catherine Belton was on this show. You know, she's a real hero. Like, she wrote this book, Putin's People. And I'm very proud that I think this is one of the first interviews she did for that book. But like, It's over there. It's an amazing book. She sat face to face with oligarchs and got them to, like, you know, confront them about things. She's as bold as they get, as brilliant as they get. And she laid in the book kind of like, ultimately, this is all about what she, her term, black cash networks, right? Like, people with giant amounts of money need giant amounts of money to move, and they need to move it in ways that won't get them in trouble, right? And I feel like if you're talking about the Wheel of Fortune, Caleb is interpreting your comment, but I feel like this is what I started this whole process really ignorant about, and just have had like a crash course and just like, what does that look like? How does that go? What are the trappings of that, right? And I think that's where, well, this morning's post is about the Dalton School. I think like you end up with like a lot of different people in these small circles who have an understanding or a role of like these big cash networks, right? This is what we're kind of talking about. This is what Jeffrey Epstein knew a lot about. Exactly who was where and when and what they did. Like that's a whole more complicated thing. But in general, I think we're talking about, you know, my relationship with a bank is like, I got a mortgage, right? Like, you know, that's how I think of banking, but like, that's not how Jeffrey Epstein thought of banking, right?
My lack of culture compared to yours is, well, maybe not culture, but just general intelligent history, because I'm going to keep just talking about shows, but on Billions, that one of the main characters, Axe, he's doing everything to get a bank charter. And we know he's not doing it, so we give lollipops to the children that come with their moms, open up a $10 checking account, right? Yeah. There's power in having those bank charters. So Henry, you had me read one of your books on these subjects. We mostly focus on Alan Dulles. Was it The Devil's Brigade? What's it called?
The Devil's Chessboard.
Devil's Chessboard, yeah. So it's a dark book, and not, I thought it'd be heavily footnoted. Most of the books I do read, which is typically nonfiction, are very heavily footnoted, and I love that. This one wasn't. Yours is so well-sourced. If you could, to take a moment before we actually talk about basketball again.
We're going to get to Ben Simmons and Bradley Beal trades in just a second. We're the only show that does this, by the way. Come on, we got Hitler and Ben Simmons. Let's go.
Yeah, we're going to go from Hitler to Malcolm Brogdon like three steps. Just give us a second. Yeah. But can you walk us through your process of discovery and then note-taking and into story form?
Yeah, I named the thing True Hoop starting a long time ago. Like, I'm into not using conspiracy theories and a bunch of horse crap, right? This was the pandemic, right? I'm still just kind of mopping up all the stuff I learned while I was locked in this room, right? And mostly I had the questions that I talked about at the beginning of this show and just wanted to get smart and talk to people like Catherine Belton and a million others. One of the things that I've done is, you know, when I would go nowhere, our local library was open. And they had minimal staff and they had a bunch of rules about what you could touch and whatever, but I'd put on my N95 mask and I know, well, I could tell you exactly where in the basement stacks, like the World War II section is and where the, you know, on and on. Right. And I would look up the books that I had recommended or whatever. But then I would just go to that section and just look at all the books. Cause I didn't want to I didn't want to have a process that was defined by my personal network, right? I wanted to sort of like, well, what else is said on this topic? And I would check out like 17 books and bring them back. And some of them I just not even read because they were crap. But you know, a tremendous number of books. I would read the whole thing and I would take little notes and then I would type up the little notes with all page numbers and everything. And then I would half a sentence. You know what I mean? Like in what you've read on True Hoop, it'd be like, oh, that little fact comes from there, right? And this one comes from there. But all in all, I feel like I'm trying to use like the New York Times or National Archives has a lot of stuff online, or, you know, these FBI released files, just like rock solid stuff. Or if it's like that book, you referenced a David Talbot book, right? To the extent that we're making forays with sources that are like potentially more opinionated, right? David Talbot comes very highly recommended. Like he has a very serious journalism career. And that book was like way out there when it came out. But over time, I think people dug into it more and been like, you know, it's not quite so quite so crazy as we thought when it came out. So, you know, when people are leading as reporters, sometimes they don't get to have the footnotes, right? Because you don't get 50 people to tell you the deep, dark secrets, right? That book has a bunch of stuff about who killed JFK. like you're not going to get footnotes on that one. So to the extent that you go outside of the most safest information in the world, to me, it's like, let's just look at the reputation of the person who's taking us there. And like, did their information tend to stand up? Do they seem to be journalists? Do they seem to have good sources? So that's kind of the process. There's, you know, the 500,000 most salacious things I've learned are not published here at all, right? Just, right. Well, couldn't support it. So trying to be careful, trying to be persnickety. Judy reads everything too. She's a lawyer. I feel like some of this stuff, I mean, the fact that there was this meeting at the Waldorf Astoria and a Nazi secret agent proposed to, thanks Judy. Judy says in the chat, I'm thoroughly troubled by all of it. But the fact, like, that was reported contemporaneously in the New York Times, right? And the fact that he was a secret agent, he said to a Department of Justice investigator later, like, that happened. We just got to cope with that. We just got to like live in the world where that's really what happened. And it was, you know, those lawyers really did work for those American companies, and they really did have those roles in the CIA, and they really did a lot of work with people under Hitler. Like, you know, we're not going to find that there was like a whoopsie in the reporting on that. You know, that was you can look it up anywhere.
In your post last week, I told you this on the phone. I've always believed that the Red Scare, the Red Menace, and again, I grew up as a child of the 70s and 80s, where the movies like War Games came out. There was Failsafe. All these things were happening in my childhood. I always believed that it was a reaction by the powerful money people. Even when I was young, I thought this. The fear of communism was really a fear of, initially I thought, just more taxes. They don't want to pay more taxes. As I aged, I started thinking they were afraid that the state would grab power from them, like we know has happened in the Soviet Union and now Russia. Until I read your piece, I never made the connection to, it was all a smokescreen. Walk us through the smokescreen of the fear of communism brought on because of our connections to Nazis following World War II. You write about this.
I mean, it's funny. Actually, I talked to Carl Sudler, friend of the show, actual professional historian on Friday. Yeah. Love Carl. Like, you know, I need to get a whole education. I'm not a historian, right? I'm a basketball journalist who's visiting books about World War II, right? I wouldn't be the right person to really weigh in here, but it did strike me that a selection of very wealthy, very powerful Americans made business bets on Hitler's empire. And then it all went the wrong way, right? Like, the US joined the other side of the war and won. And then this guy, O. John Rogge, personally went to Hitler with his tiny Spartan justice and interviewed people and got some paperwork and wrote a huge report on like this, on these business deals, Hitler's business allies. And he took it back to his bosses, and it's still never been published to this day. Mm-hmm. And he thought it, and so that struck me as like, there must be a bunch of people who felt very vulnerable, right? They were basically Nazi sympathizers. This, in some cases, people threw around the word treason, right? They must've been nervous in these years after 1945. What were they up to, right? And then this guy, O. John Rogge, who's literally going on a speaking tour to alert America to like, look what happened. He loses his job from the Department of Justice. And you can see in the National Archives, that who sent the note is blacked out. But somebody sent Hoover, the head of the FBI at the time, a note saying, I hope you can do something about this guy, O. John Rogge. He's just a communist. I don't know if he's doing this because he loves China, blah, blah, blah. But this struck me as like, oh, wow, this feels like a playbook from like 2021, where, you know, someone's offending the powers that be. And so they did not have a fight about the evidence. They did not have a fight about like what he found or the report or why it was suppressed. They had a fight about, I think he's a commie. And then in the years to come, a lot of people with very deep ties and very wealthy Americans on Wall Street and such like became like the leaders of this Red Scare. And so I don't know, I think that the way that, you know, this kind of stuff works is, I don't know that it necessarily is invented in the back room. I think they kind of look around and it's like, at the Putin conference I went to, they talk about pushing open doors. So with that, he's like, this is a judo thing you say. So like, if your opponent's leaning right, you push him right, right? Like, you don't just decide where they want to go. You look where they're going, right? So we had an American populace, which was like, are the Nazis the bad guys or is it the Russians, right? And like, oh, if you guys are leaning Russians, like, let me push you to the Russians. And then we can lose a little focus on whatever happened. Then World War II is over. We don't have to worry about the Nazis anymore, right? Like, I think we were prone to believing that. There was anti-communism Red Scare stuff even before World War II in America, to some degree. But I think it was like it was an open door, right? It was an opportunity to just like throw a little fire on the flames. And boy, it's still going. It's still how we discuss politics, right? Like literally, like they're like, oh, there's a pandemic, you should get a vaccine. And they're like, commie. It's like, that word doesn't mean that. Like, that's not what that means. Anyway.
It was, just to be clear, at my hosting skills, of which I may never host again, my intent going into this was to get you to at least reference the Putin conference one time.
I got it. Nailed. Boom.
I did. I was going to go there anyway, if you hadn't done it.
Less than 20 minutes, David. Nice work.
I wanted to connect that dot to your you went to the Putin conference. I think just before the pandemic hit is when you went.
I want to say it was, 2019.
Was it 19? Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been later 19. So, but just to be clear, what you describe in that distraction kind of thing, it isn't unique. It's how many of the countries in the Middle East have used the Palestinian problem. Not to say that Israel is not guilty of lots of things, a separate argument, but those countries have always used that issue to get their people riled about that, and not the fact that no one's picked up their garbage in 10 weeks and the water's not clean, or whatever, however the governments are failing. Countries do this all the time, and it's certainly America has done it when we were worried about the Visigoths at the southern border during the midterms, right? We've always used that kind of distraction politics. It wouldn't be unique to anything there. But the reason I wanted you to mention the PutinCon conference is I want to just wrap this up in what you see happening in today's world that you can connect to what the lessons you've learned from those times. And then if you can, try to dovetail it into where the NBA, I know you're still working on your piece, your articles to come, but there is a five-alarm fire here we all can see. There is a concern as an NBA fan of who are we working with? So kind of walk us through that a little bit, then we'll go into basketball.
Yeah, I mean, the real answer to that is keep reading. There's more to come. The short answer, I guess, is do you notice that we don't ask where money comes from? So let's say I start an investment fund and we're going to be venture capitalists, or we're going to go to Silicon Valley and, invest in a bunch of like chat apps or whatever, right? Everyone's like, yeah, look, there is two. That money want, right? And I think there's a pretty, and I will add to that one little note, which is there was a highly respected report after the financial crash, 2007, that basically banks had a tremendously terrible time finding cash. And this is what, when Prokhorov joined the NBA, which is a related point, according to this report, they couldn't find any major banks that didn't get money in that period from drug dealers. These are the people, there's a part of this story we've already published about, they started a whole courier company just to move the physical cash of the early days of the cocaine trade in the US. They started like nationwide, people in uniforms, little trucks, we've all seen them, that existed as a front, like just to move the cash so they could get it to Panama to put it in the banking system. And then the guy who testified before Congress, I would take that. Then once it was all in, deposited in Panama, then I would just get a limo to the biggest banks in the world headquarters in New York, and we would do business, right? They were happy to see me. So the Caleb's calling. I see you, Caleb. Anyway, so we haven't paid attention to that forever. It's created some problems. I think that, the money going into the financial system is coming from some very questionable places, and the people who give it don't give it just because they're like good people who want healthy investments, right? They want stuff. And sometimes they want, okay, last little point I'll make here is, and I think I said this before, but like Stephen A. Cohen was mentioned in the newspaper with his proximity to financial crimes every time his name came up. And then he bought the Mets, right? And now he's mentioned with like starting pitchers and playoff right. hopes. And, you know, like it totally changes his reputation. It worked on Gerard. Who's now saying Woo Mets in the chat. But yeah, so you get a, you know, Stephen A. Cohen is now a completely different and more friendly defined billionaire after working at a place where the FBI listened to his employees. And it was like, as far as they could tell, everybody was insider trading. You know, there's a whole book about it, a really good book called Black Edge. Anyway, so there you go. That's the answer is I think we just need to, you know, we need to really look at who has the big money, where that money comes from, and why are they so loving sports these days?
Yeah. Well, you've been saying that it's not just because it's an appreciating asset over time, especially if you're losing money every year. There's other reasons why these guys are buying teams. And that's what you just kind of referenced. And so to bring it into basketball, I have a great way to do it. I have a clever way to do it. You talked about leaning in at the Putin conference. You learned about leaning into something that's very relevant to basketball. And what I mean by that is we teach, for example, in the post, if a guy is defending you on the baseline side and you want to get open, don't pop up, go into him. If you're big enough, push him down far to the baseline, opens up a lot more room in front of you, and vice versa. He's guarding what we call the top side. Don't move down. Take him farther up to where he is, and then seal him. And now you have tons of room to throw a bounce pass the block. You just turn and score. It's very much how you use leverage in basketball, not just in life and politics. So with that in mind, I think you wanted to take over the show.
Yeah, I wish you get Gerard in here.
I'm Gerard, yeah.
Talk about the Mets a little bit.
I have a quick question for Gerard.
Hey, no, that's true.
I want to talk about dirty money and all this fun stuff. That's way more
really?
Fun than basketball.
Really, Gerard? That's what you want to do?
That's way more fun than basketball.
I agree.
Fun? I don't know. Like, David doesn't find it very fun. Let's be honest.
Gerard, I told Henry on the phone this morning, we had a little family dinner party with all my siblings and some of the kids, well, my sister's kids, everyone else in college, and my parents sat outside in terrible humidity because my 10-year-old nephew has been vaccinated. And we got to talking about politics and we're all arguing, even though we're all of us on the same side, 100%. Arguing is the wrong word. We're just vociferously discussing. But my brother Mike, who has every reason, He's a radiologist, his wife's a radiologist, they both got med school after 2 years, like brilliant people, they've won the game. They live well. You would think if anyone would want to take the side of, oh, things are pretty good here, would be someone like that. And I'm happy to say, not at all. He thinks America's fucked. And we talked about Henry's Hitler post on Friday and his whole face darkened. Like, oh, that was heavy. And he's pissed at Henry because there's so much going on. It's too fast. Like, I need to really slow down. No. Well,
he's right. He's right. We need the like take a breath, slow down version. I look forward to creating that later. Yes,
as a sports fan, look, you just want what you want. It's your own self-interest. The Wilpons were terrible owners. Steve Cohen, he's a bad guy, but he spends money on the team, so that's better for me. Hey, Steve Cohen.
That's how it works. That's it works like a charm. Yeah. I do think though, like, it's funny, like I don't, all this stuff is like a terrible cancer, right? It's like, it's literally like a cancer. It's like a tumor, right? But I think we're pretty good at cancer treatment once you get the diagnosis, right? And I feel like this is what's happening. I'm far from doing the only or best work here, but like, I think we're at a moment where like most of America's history, we've been like, you know, a little bit of a Norman Rockwell version of like, you know, well, the bankers, like, you know, all this kind of stuff. And now we're like, what the fuck is happening in this world? Like, what's going on? You know, we need to get it right. And I think that if we, there's a really good business book. I forget what it's called, but it comes down to like, what is the problem? And like, like if you know what I'm saying, like if we can identify the problem here, if someone can explain to me what Jeffrey Epstein really did, like, and what that problem is, if we can solve that problem, if we can address it and define it, I think we can probably solve it pretty fast. We haven't tried at all, right? Like the powers that be by and large have been like, you know, involved, overseeing, adjacent to, around this game forever, and like now it's like, no, let's clean it up, guys. Come on, chop chop, let's go, let's do it.
No incentive for them to do that because, you know, this is a high, everyone knows the game risk, right? Game of global domination. That is essentially what's happening, right? You got these superpowers, right? Us, China, Russia, whatever, doing their thing. And then you have the way the board changes now is that super wealthy individuals, right, are also power players on this board. And, you know, when shit happens, they use a lovely term called collateral damage. We, us, the plebs, we are the collateral damage, right? When the, well, you don't got healthcare. Ah, sorry, that sucks. You know, your banking system's fucked up. Okay, well, sorry. Like, these are the things that happen that, and we are the ones who get toppled over like little flicks on the board. And, you know, hey, that's why you have to be the people who are the global pieces, right? We got to be the Epstein's. No, what am I saying? We don't want to.
In which Sherron Hector makes the case. The pivot true hoop from a little basketball thing to like, what exactly?
I'm like, let's be demagogues and go on to that. Yeah, that's what we should do. Yeah.
To be clear, you're not the only person who, not the only person on the Zoom call that balances banking and finances with basketball. In my, right behind me, in my shelves in my office, probably 80% of the books up there are basketball books. But I do have a book called The Bankers that a friend of mine who's since passed away long ago, was a mentor of mine. He told me once many decades ago, if you really want to understand how America works, you better understand the banking industry. Mm-hmm. And he told me to buy that book. So I did. I read it 20 years ago. I've forgotten all of it. I'm petrified now to pick it back up. I'm going to wait till Henry's whole thing is done, and then I'm going to pick it back up and look at it again.
Well, we know right before we move into basketball talk, because that is why we're here, that you're never going to have these large sums of money move from country to country without the people that matter at the power levers being in control of that, right? Like, money doesn't just roll into Russia without Vladimir Putin's knowledge, and right? That's just how this works. And, you know, if you are the people who have the access to that, right? Like, so you're Epstein's, you're billionaires, right? You're Saudi princes and all these dudes, you know, this is the name of the game, my friends. And we are all just little peons as part of their big game. That's why you got to be the big guy. You don't want to be a peon.
All right, speaking of big guy,
I want to map out like that Gerard's like political positions are communist and Leon Black, like both.
You know, I kind of I straddle both. It's like, oh, I see some advantages to that Leon Black.
You got range, buddy.
Listen, that's what you gotta be versatile in this world, man. Gotta have versatility.
Do you watch Billions?
Coach, do I watch Billions?
So he wrote Billions.
Axe has a stressful life, but it's a good life.
I was gonna say, yeah, that super yacht, so that's pretty cool.
You're doing okay. That's amazing to be in New York City. He seems to drive everywhere. Oh, I know it's better for the show, but use the phone, bro. Use the phone sometimes.
It's crazy.
All right. Call time out on the Hitler thing. All right, David has written a draft of a story. I have it printed out. You guys haven't seen it yet. It's coming out soon, but basically, he pretended, well, there are different components. For the main component, he pretended he's Daryl Morey, and he looked at 29 other teams, what Ben Simmons trades are realistically possible that would check the boxes of getting fair value, helping the Sixers win now, and getting Ben Simmons somewhere that makes sense for the other team. And short answer, not a lot of options. Is that fair?
Yeah, I came up with, I think, seven teams.
Yeah.
And I focus on more simplistic deals. Of course, they're much more complicated deals. But as the season goes on, I don't know that complicated makes more sense. I mean, they're going to be trying to focus on winning games. The season starts, the first games are, you know, just over a month away, real games.
So you kind of alluded to a lot of people can't be traded until some date in November.
Of when they sign, whatever, early November 5th is a date that I've heard. I'm not sure if it's the same for everyone, but right around that time. But every game the Sixers don't have Simmons, they're less good than they were last year. And the Bucks and the Nets and the Hawks and the Heat will be winning more games. Yeah. And the Sixers don't want to waste any years with Embiid. So, yeah, I found a few deals that I don't think can happen, including one that I wanted to get Gerard's opinion on right away. First of all, Gerard, would you agree, in theory, on paper, a Ben Simmons for Kyrie Irving makes sense for both teams? Not from a culture standpoint, from a talent fit standpoint.
Yeah, because Ben adds a defensive piece, and he can play in transition and passing and playmake and all that. So yeah, that would work. And then and Kyrie, Joel Embiid pick and rolls, pretty nasty.
Be amazing, right? Yeah. So, but would you also agree? You know more than I do from inside that locker room that KD would likely not okay that trade, or do you think he might?
No, he wouldn't like that.
That's what I thought.
I don't think the Ben Simmons vibe kind of works with KD.
Plus, Kyrie's his guy.
And Kyrie's his guy, right? Like, that's a no.
Right. So it only happened a few times where I thought, well, maybe they could do this deal. Another one with the Nuggets, where Jamal Murray for Ben Simmons makes some sense.
Does.
Simmons, Jokic, Porter Jr.
Woo! I like that.
They're all really, giants.
Giant people.
And he propels them defensively. But first of all, Jamal Murray's coming off the ACL, I think it was an April injury. So the Sixers don't get.
No.
Yeah, they don't get Jamal Murray till too late, probably. And there'll be some other guys involved in that trade, too. But I really, those are the principles. And also, let's face it, Jamal Murray is an unbelievable playoff scorer. Ben Simmons definitely isn't that. Although we haven't had a lot of experience, we have a couple of years of it where I'm not sure the Denver team would break up that core. It seems like they really feel like they've got a connection. But anyway, those are the deals that I did not think would likely happen. Henry, let's talk about the Spurs first. It doesn't check the one important box I think Daryl Morey has, which is I've got to get an all-star back Daryl's all about putting together the best combination of talent I can as a duo. If I can get three, even better, but let's start with two and then I'll build around it and we'll coach around it. And so I understand that. I think Daryl's one of the smartest guys in basketball, and I wouldn't contest a single thought that he has on that. The Spurs don't have that option, but, and I'll go, we'll talk about some options that Daryl does have with teams with all-stars. So Gerard and Henry, so Derek White, DeJounte Murray, and Devin Vassell. You get amazing backcourt to play with Embiid. Not amazing if they're the two best players on your team.
Right.
When you got Harris and Embiid already, to have that defensive-minded backcourt that can shoot and that are, I mean, I think DeJounte is 24. Yeah, so it's not like he's an old guy. I think Derek might be 26, 27. To go with what they already have and Seth Curry, Danny Green, Maxi, and then I think Vassell's got all-star talent. I've said that since he was in college. So you're getting a guy on the come that might be an all-star player. And the Spurs would get, okay, now I've got piece one. They've got Kelvin Johnson, you know, who I don't think is going to be an all-star, but he's a pretty good player. They drafted Primo, youngest kid in the draft who's got a chance to be good. So I think it gives the Spurs something to work with that first all-star. What do you think about that?
I mean, I like it. The thing is what you said at the beginning, right? Which is Daryl doesn't get the thing that he needs, which is the all-star right now, today. Like, who is the guy in the playoffs that's going to score me 20-something points a night? Like, that's why non-injured, the Murray one, I was like, ooh, right? Because it's like that works for them, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, he will not be afraid to shoot in the playoffs, right? Like, he will empty all the bullets.
Oh, it sounds like Gerard's interested in a Bradley Beal for them. David, did you explore that?
I did. That's one of the deals I have. So for Beal, it's very different. The Simmons gets no power. He gets traded wherever he gets traded. Daryl Morey is not asking Ben, hey, are you okay with this? No. You're notifying Rich Paul, here's what we're doing. You don't want to tell Rich Paul and have him scuttle a deal if you think you have a good deal. You'll run the risk later, but you've got to make a deal if you're Daryl Morey to help the Sixers. So there are seven teams that I talked about. I think you take Simmons and give Daryl something that'll make his team better. There's other deals we can talk about later. Beal is a very different situation, Gerard. I only found three potential deals because he has got to go to a contender.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy Shepard, our friend with the Wizards, needs something of real value back, whether it's, I'd like to win now. I mean, I've Spencer Dinwiddie that I'm paying money to, and Davis Bertans I'm paying money to, and some young players that we think have some talent, and some guys that are, you know, 2-3 years and not just rookies. And so you can't B Beal makes so much money, Gerard, that you could break a team apart to make the deal work. And then where he goes isn't going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, you can't trade him for Jaylen Brown.
Right.
He's improving the Celtics a little bit, but not enough. So one of the teams that you can do a deal with, I thought, is Denver. So Denver gets Jamal Murray and name the person. It would be more than Jamal Murray. Not MPJ, not Jokic, probably not Will Barton. There's a few other, maybe Will Barton. And the Nuggets get Beal. And I think become favorites in the West.
Oh, look at that. Bradley Beal, Michael Porter Jr., Nikola Jokic. I'm sold.
Pretty good, right?
David, you also like Beal for Simmons.
Well, that's the easiest one of all. So that's the easiest one. But as I write, Henry, why hasn't it been done? Daryl and Tommy know each other well. They know each other's cell phone numbers. They probably, I don't know if you name all of Tommy's kids. He has a lot of them. But they probably know each other's families. And the deal's not done. So that tells me something. Could be Beal doesn't want to go there, right? You never know. He doesn't want to play Joel Embiid. I'm just guessing. I have no idea. You brilliantly said last week that Beal has talked about how much he likes the schools in D.C. for his children, which, of course, to me is just a smart thing to say. It doesn't mean it's true, but his kids can stay in Philly. It's not that what
train line
is that?
Yeah.
What's that school in D.C. that all the politicians and major players and their kids?
Sidwell Friends.
There you go. Yeah.
But I mean, but to Henry's point, the kids could stay in D.C., Bally could play in Philadelphia, and they'd still be close enough, whatever, because it's not that far away. So that's the easiest one of all. And then the third deal I have is a Warriors deal.
Yeah.
Same thing with Simmons is Beal goes to Golden State to play with Clay, Steph, and Draymond. And I think Tommy would ask for Wiseman and Kuminga and Wiggins to get the deal work financially. And so the Wizards get a good player, Andrew Wiggins. He doesn't hurt their team this year. He's not as good as Bradley Beal. So they're going to take a little bit hit there. But they've added Spencer Dinwiddie's an upgrade from Ish Smith and Nato from last year. And you get Kuminga and Wiseman. Both have all-star talent. So I think that's something. And don't you think the Warriors would like Beal to play with those other guys?
Oh, yeah.
Think Beal would like it too? That's really the more important question.
That is an extra shot creator, and right, which they need, right? Because that was the thing with the Warriors. It's like, all right, when we double Steph, like who on this team is creating offense?
Nobody. Top two scorers last year in the league. Top two scorers in the league.
You now have Bradley Beal can do that. I like that deal. I wonder, back to Daryl's point and the Philly thing, how much of it is, I mean, and you guys know Daryl's probably not like this, but anytime you make a move with a guy's client, right? It's, of course, about the current move, but it's future working with that agent, right? So if Daryl pisses off Rich and Clutch 3 years from now after they win the title or don't win the title and Embiid's hurt and whatever, and they need to get Clutch guys, is Rich Paul like, yeah, no, we're not doing that now. We're not going to Philly. Like, you know what I mean? Is that a consideration?
Well, before you answer, David, there's also, when you were saying that about, like, you don't care where, Rich Paul is happy, basically, like, I think I've talked to four agents in the last 2 months about this exact thing, and that might not be true anymore, right? So, like, by saying that Ben Simmons will just sit home and let the Sixers fry, like, that threat is there. Like, if Rich Paul feels the same way about the next stop, they still don't get Ben Simmons. All the pressure's on Daryl will just transfer to the next one, right? So you might, you know, someone is going to call, like, you know, back channel, because they're not supposed to, you know, it could be tampering, but someone's going to call from every team that's considering trading for Ben Simmons to make sure that Ben Simmons will show up.
Right. So I'll clarify my point. First of all, this is the most important point of all. There's only 30 teams.
Yeah.
And so if I don't know Rich Paul, I've never met him. If you're Rich Paul and you're recruiting the next line of top five players or free agents to be that are about to make a bunch of money, and it's now known that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams just aren't working well with you, that's not good for business. That's bad for business. You want to be able to make deals with everyone and have it be transactional. We're upset with Daryl Morey about Ben Simmons, but going forward, absolutely we can work with Philadelphia 76ers. The agency has to be able to do that. What you don't intentionally piss Ben Simmons off. That would be a mistake. Like, you don't trade him to Cleveland as punishment. You only give the deal if they can put together a package that really makes the Sixers compete this year better than they would otherwise. What all I'm saying is you don't check with Ben, hey, is this okay with you? The other team might. That's not something Philadelphia has to do. The other team will call and say, hey, we're excited to have you here. That's fine. And right. you don't let Rich Paul find out about it on the internet. You absolutely say, hey, we have a deal in place here just to let you know. That's common. That's courtesy. But you don't got to get his permission.
I think so. That as it was explained to me by like someone who lives this, they're basically like, you know, you're going to trade my superstar to the Pistons. Like you're getting fired. Like, you know, the Pistons GM is getting fired before my guy leaves his living room. So like that's food for thought, right? Like, I think this is where, I think we're at a moment now where it totally matters where Ben wants to play. I think, I just don't think the trade will get done any other way. Like, I think he has to say, I want to go there, or he's not going there because they're not going
to want to or willing to.
Well, he has to go. I mean, one little part of it is he has to pass a physical. He has to show up for physical, or the other team has to waive their requirement of a physical, right? Like if he simply says he won't go, he won't go. No trade. So this is the way agents are talking now. And like, basically, you know, I was like, well, what if, you know, the team with the superstar isn't satisfied? Then like, they're just going to have to get used to less. Like they're just going to get less for their player. Cause the other option is nothing and you're fired. Like, like this is how this negotiation is going now. You know, it's a battle for the ages and it'll have many chapters and it'll play out. And maybe Daryl can play hardball in this one, but like in the big picture, I think this is what player empowerment is coming to, is like, you know, I don't think he's going with a team he doesn't want to go to.
This will be interesting. I'm very curious to see how it actually does play out because he's very clear, right? I want to go to the two California teams, which means he doesn't consider the Kings or the three California teams. He doesn't consider the Kings an actual California franchise.
the only team that could, well, the two teams that could do it, the Clippers and the Lakers, I don't think are likely. Sacramento, Golden State are. In fact, there's no other teams that I put in the piece. There's no place that Ben Simmons should be afraid to go to. The Spurs, for example, did a great job with some of their players to include Tony Parker. And look what they've done with Rudy Gay's career, obviously in a very different place than Ben Simmons. It should be a great place for him. But yeah, what Henry brings up, we deal with that in European football for sure. Agents control everything, but they don't, it's a very different world and they don't have a draft.
Yeah.
And that to me, somebody's been writing about this. It's a great fight. If the agents want to grab that power and you still have a draft, good luck. If I've pissed you off and you won't send me players, and I have the number one pick and you're recruiting the guy that's going to go number one, you're fucked. A lot of these agents don't care about repping the guy drafted 24th, 25th, to be honest. Those top five guys are big money.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, because that second contract is that's the money.
Well, yeah. And you get 4% of the NBA deal and 15% of the endorsement contract, which you don't get when you're draft 24.
Right. So there's some battlegrounds here that can be laid out. But to me, everything's still driving the same idea of this: the East is the better conference this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Philly can't just, I think Philly got better. If Ben Simmons was happy in Philadelphia, I think they're better now than they were a year ago. I think they're maybe even considerably better, like 4 or 5 games better, 60 wins better. But that's a myth. It's not happening because Simmons isn't happy. And the East has gotten stronger, like from 12 up. 13, 14, 15, no good. But 12 up, they're pretty good.
Atlanta surprise. Surprise people. Now we know they're good in Miami. All the, you know, and even though we said about Boston last week, but with Tatum and Brown, they're still good. I want to shout Caleb out for his fantastic Adele references in the group chat, obviously teasing Rich Paul and Adele's relationship. This is hilarious. I love it. This is good stuff, Caleb. Excellent work by you.
I want Caleb to join us and sing these lines at appropriate moments of the conversation, right?
I saw that Caleb put Taylor Horton Tucker for Ben Simmons. That's a no.
That's a no.
That's a Daryl Morey hard no.
Well, you know, Portland, Henry, let's go. Because, look, I know you keep Dame, but you move CJ and you get Ben and, you know, some other shit. That's, you like that, right? Dame and Ben.
I have a friend who works for the Trailblazers. And I was basically like, I don't know if, like, Neil has, like, the authority to sell Ben to the local community now, right? And he's like, no, no, no. you have it all wrong. It's exactly the opposite. He's like, Portland fans don't think we can get another big player here ever. He's like, if you bring in someone of Ben Simmons caliber, nothing else matters. Like, they're going to love it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I didn't, that is news to me. I mean, that's believable. I don't live in Portland. I haven't been there a long time. Like, but that was interesting. So, not as someone who has his finger on the pulse, but like, I think the idea that you would shake up this Blazer roster in a profound way and Ben Simmons was going to be like the big risk you take, like, sure.
You're like, I'm in.
It doesn't seem like they have the option to just keep it anything like it is, right? That seems like they're the one team that everyone knows. Well, I guess with the Sixers, they just, well, we can't keep doing this, right? We're going to have to do something different. It's going to be big. It's going to be big.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I could see an argument. Look, the worst case would be, you know, Damon already has them on notice. Then you make your big trade. And then he's like, I hate it.
Oh, yeah. Then you're right. Then you're like, and you're screwed.
Part of me's like,
but you still have Ben Simmons. If you did that, you still have Ben Simmons, whether he's traded for Dame or CJ.
Right.
And both of them are in the article that I'm working on. Either one of those deals could happen. They're easy.
Right. But I guess my point is CJ isn't 1 foot out the door. Like, part of me is like, if you're trying to fix the problem of Damian's not happy here, like, maybe you want to put together a Damian trade, right? Like, I could see that you would make that decision because otherwise you're still on thin ice, right? You're still just trying stuff. And
okay, to drive another deal that I like very much.
Let's make a deal. All right.
There isn't an all-star, which is a caveat.
Star Moore.
but as we're talking about, there's no guarantee you're going to get an all-star. There's also no guarantee Ben Simmons would want to do this. I think he would be happy. You know, remember, any trade for Ben Simmons, the GM and the coaches are calling Ben and they're recruiting the hell out of him. Like, we're going to do this for you and that. And it's going to be hard for him to say no, 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 because the narrative just gets worse and worse for him. So do you say no if you're Daryl Morey or if you're the Pacers, Malcolm Brogdon and TJ Warren for Ben Simmons? Brogdon takes care of the point guard problem.
It does.
They trade Ben Simmons. They have no point guard.
Leon Black says no. Yeah.
Leon Black says
no. Who says no?
Leon Black. That's my alter ego.
Gerard's getting his billionaire on. He's like, TJ Warren.
I'm like, as an NBA billionaire, like, oh, those moves, those names don't excite me. I don't want Malcolm Brogdon.
He wants all stars.
Yeah.
Brogdon has been an all star.
I know. No, I
know you know, and TJ Warren in the bubble was the best player in the bubble.
So if TJ's healthy, I would like that deal. I might want something else, like a pick, something.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be little garnishes. Yeah.
Would that work contract money-wise? That works?
Yeah. I checked on the trade machine. So Gerard, so the Sixers would have Brogdon and Danny Green and TJ Warren, Tobias Harris, and Embiid as a starting five.
With
now you can bring Seth Curry off the bench
and Tybal.
Off the bench and George Niang and Andre Drummond and
you got a lot of space. You got a lot of space around Embiid because all those guys can shoot.
Yeah. All right. TJ's been 40% from three or 38 2 years in a row. I forget what it was. Yeah, last 2 years.
But this is not one where Daryl wins the press conference, but it probably is one where they go deep in the playoffs.
I was going to say, he's not winning that press conference, but.
And he doesn't do it day one. Like, if you just can't seem to extricate that all-star and this deal is potentially on the table. Listen, I could see Indiana saying no with Rick Carlisle. I could see Indiana saying, well, how long is Ben going to be before he wants to go to some big market or whatever? We're not going to run that risk. It's possible.
Well, that's interesting. Let's talk about that. How do you see a Rick Carlisle, Ben Simmons conversation going?
First of all, Indiana basically is California. So I don't want to hear anything about that.
It's a great question, Gerard asks. I think that initially it would go great. Because
Carlisle might actually kill Ben Simmons. No,
Rick knows what he's doing. He would never let Ben know he was frustrated if he was frustrated. And Rick is a tinkerer. Rick is one of these head coaches who likes to be the one to work with the player on a shot. Don't leave it to an assistant. He doesn't stay for long. He'll helicopter in, helicopter out. And if it goes great, beautiful. If not, he kind of moves on some. But he's not moving on from Ben. And Rick is a basketball coach. Like, he would love all the things Ben brings. I don't know if Ben would like Indiana. But this is my point of, as an agent for Ben, if the team, the team would be good. Sabonis is a very good player.
Oh, I love Sabonis.
He's an all-star. Mm-hmm. You could have two all-stars on their team. And they've got some other good players. So, and a great coach, Hall of Fame coach. So if you're Rich Paul and you just don't let your guys go to those small markets, their league gets really, really small. And he's not going to be able to, unless he doesn't want to sign anything but the elite of elite, which is typically not how they practice. They tend to want to have a larger tent and a bunch of great players. You can't, but you, if you piss them off and they don't want to take your guy at 18, 19, 20 because of it, you get fired as an agent sometimes from the player. You got to, there's fight both ways there. Yeah. And I think Rich Paul is super bright. I think he's thinking, he's got to think what's best for this player and not sacrifice all the goodwill and business you want to do for everyone else you represent. And I think he gets that. I would guess he would get that anyway. Yeah.
What's crazy is like all of these seem a little far-fetched, but one of them's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Like something's, this is a situation where like something big is going to happen. Like, I don't really think they're going to just bring Ben Simmons back.
Well, we know, right? Is it the case, you know, where you're talking about, right? Where the smoke, the spire, and we keep hearing about the same team over and over and over and over. It's like, all right, what's going on here? So do we think, I mean, the team that comes up more than any team is the Warriors. So is that the one we think is probably the most likely?
I don't, because I don't like it for the Philadelphia.
Yeah, well, because, yeah, you don't get, I mean, Wiggins is like,
No, he's just, I love Andrew Wiggins, but compared to everyone else I have in the trade, in those trades, he's at best even with DeJounte Murray, Derek White, or below.
And he doesn't, he's not a creator for you like that. Like, he's not, you know.
No, Tobias scores 20 points a game. They already have two 20-point scorers. Simmons does everything else.
Yeah.
And you're gonna, if you had Kyrie or if you have a Brogdon and a TJ Warren, you're gonna have to play differently for sure. Wiggins doesn't really let you do anything different, and you still have a point guard problem.
Mm-hmm. They do have a point guard problem.
What's that?
They do have a point guard problem. Like, this is a They have Shake Milton still, right? Right?
Yeah, but he's more of an off guard, I think. And they have Maxey, who's in his.
But he's there when the case of emergency break glass for point guard.
They both are. Yeah. I think that's why the Indiana deal and the San Antonio deals, I didn't go into any of these things expecting anything. I just went to all 29 teams and looked around and fiddled with it. And those guys checked the box of, okay, we got a lead guard in the playoffs. And Brogdon's got 5 years experience in the playoffs, only 24 games, but it's still 5 years and it's been the playoffs every year.
But if it's great for the Warriors and Ben Simmons, and the losing party is the Sixers, it has a chance of happening, right? If the agents are taking over the league rule is happening, then that's exactly what it looked like, right? And it's not terrible, right? It's not like Daryl would be sunk.
I think there'd be a third team, Henry. If that was the case, guys, and they had to do a deal with Golden State because nothing else was materializing, I think Wiseman would be in the deal. And Daryl would move Weissman somewhere else to get at least a veteran. The team's got to be better this year. Well, you might have Joel Embiid bitching, even though he just signed the extension.
Yes.
You got to at least be in the running this year, so they can't do it with young guys.
Philly can't get worse. They have to be at least what they were last season, or else it's like.
Not record-wise, but just in terms of potency. Because the record might be a little lower just because the league is stronger in the East.
When Klay Thompson was hurt and the Warriors just signed like the players they could get, right, to huge deals. Everybody's like, well, that's good. You got to like those deals, those big deals are exactly why now there's some reporting that like they don't want to trade those rookies away just because they need cheap players.
Yeah. Team friendly.
Right.
Deals.
Like,
yeah.
Like you, I think it might be a rule that you always screw yourself if you sign a mediocre player to a huge deal. Like, it just seems like it's too big. Christ, you just can't. It hangs over you forever the way the tax is structured.
And that's something Daryl is he's one of the best at. Go through all of his rosters over the years.
Yeah.
His guys when he does the deal, it makes sense. And you can always move him. He's always going to move his guys because he signs them to the right deals. He's really good.
Yeah.
Well, the big question is, does Josh Harris let Daryl just do his thing and not worry about winning the press conference?
Oh.
Well, you've been working with him for decades. What do you think, Leon?
If Daryl says, I think we can win a title with this, I think he would. He's got to be able to do a conviction. I think this deal gets us over the top. or at least keeps us in the running for it, then he might.
Leon Black says, we got to win that presser, man. We got to win that presser.
Maybe so.
All right, we did it, you guys. We got Malcolm Brogdon and Adolf Hitler into a podcast.
Congratulations to us.
Special day.
Great stuff.
All right, so we'll be back. Gerard will be hosting on Friday, correct. Probably a little less Hitler, I'm guessing.
Yeah, less Hitler, more Leon Black, though, I think. I think we might.
This is a thing. I'm excited about the future. I think I might
do more Leon Black. Yeah, it's a new character.
All right.
Be safe, guys.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Judy. Talk to you soon.